You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Disease Dojo podcast. Today, we're going to talk about OCD with Dr. Jesse Taima. I'm your host, Carly Sisson, digital editor of EquiManagement. The Disease du Jour podcast is brought to you in 2024 by Merck Animal Health. Dr. Taima is an accomplished equine surgeon with experience in orthopedic, soft tissue, and emergency surgery, sports medicine, and advanced diagnostic imaging on a robust thoroughbred and standardbred racehorse and mixed sport horse population. Her clinical interests include gastrointestinal and soft tissue surgery, wound management, sports medicine, and back disorders. Dr. Taima grew up in New Hope, Pennsylvania, and attended Amherst College for her undergraduate education, followed by Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine. She completed a rotating internship at Rhinebeck Equine, followed by a large animal surgical residency at the University of Georgia, and then became a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons, large animal. She returned to the Hudson Valley, New York, to join the Rhinebeck Equine team. Dr. Taima is a member of the AAEP Internship Subcommittee of the Sustainability Mission and is both a Decade One member and a Starting Gate Group facilitator. She is passionate about providing dedicated mentorship for intern veterinarians and building a strong sense of community and collaboration through her practice. Thank you, Dr. Taima, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Carly. I really appreciate it.
So do you want to get us started by explaining what OCD is?
Sure thing. OCD is an acronym for osteochondritis dissecans. I think it would be helpful to break down those words a little bit more to understand what this means. Osteochondrosis, which is commonly referred to as OC, is simply a term to describe a disturbance in the process of endochondral ossification. This is the mechanism for longitudinal bone growth in a young animal. At the ends of the long bone, at the physis or the growth plate, there's a complicated but really well orchestrated process by which the cartilage cells adjacent to the growth plate become calcified and then ultimately remodeled into trabecular bone. When there are changes in this endochondral ossification process, irregularities and inconsistencies in the thickness of the cartilage arise, which create focal areas of weakness. The cartilage cells can also lose their requisite nutrition through occlusion of vascular channels in this network, which it can cause further weakening or necrosis. Mechanical forces that would be appropriately sustained by healthy cartilage can cause fissures, creation of cartilage flaps, or even loosening and detachment of these flaps and underlying subchondral bone. In areas where there are primarily compressive forces acting on the cartilage can infold, and this can actually create a subchondral bone cyst, which similarly falls under the developmental orthopedic disorder and OC complex umbrella. So going back to our terminology here, osteochondrosis, or OC, describes the entirety of this process. Osteochondritis is the inflammation within the joint environment that results from this process. And osteochondritis dissecans is when this process results in a discernible osteochondral fragment separate from the parent bone. OCD has been described in every diarthrodial joint in the horse.
So you say it's been described in every joint, but are there some joints where it's most commonly seen?
Yeah, absolutely. They are most commonly found in the tarsocoral joint of the hock, the femoropatellar joint of the stifle, and the fetlock joints, both forelimb and hindlimb, so metacarpophalangeal and metatarsophalangeal. Within each of these joints, there are also predilection sites. For the tarsocoral joint, the distal intermediate ridge of the tibia, which is often abbreviated as the dirt area, is far and away the most common site. The lateral trochlear ridge, the medial malleolus, and the medial trochlear ridge follow, but are much less common. For the femoropatellar joint of the stifle, the lateral trochlear ridge of the femur is by far the most common site, followed by the patella, the medial trochlear ridge, and the trochlear groove. And then lastly, for fetlocks, I'm going to complicate things a little bit more here. There are some developmental lesions of the fetlocks that are not technically OCDs based on their histologic appearance. So under a microscope, they're just not of the same origin that I just described. But they get lumped into the OCD category because management is the same. True OCD lesions occur on the dorsal sagittal ridge in the fetlock, but what we would call dorsal osteochondral fragments and palmar or plantar osteochondral fragments originate from the dorsoproximal or the plantaro or palmaroproximal P1. These ones in the front or the back of the fetlocks are more often found on the medial side, both in the forelimbs and on the hindlimbs, just because of axial loading.
That's super interesting. So are there types of horses that are most susceptible to getting OCDs?
Sure thing. So just as a, with broad strokes, it's a disease of juvenile horses, but the age in which the clinical signs can that manifest can vary. And we'll talk a little bit more, I think, later on about how the osteochondrosis complex in itself is actually quite a dynamic process. And as far as types of horses, there are a ton of studies out there. They have various findings looking at the incidence of OCDs across specific breeds and within specific joints. These studies probably all have their limitations, but I think it's fair to say that the disease is most commonly seen in warmbloods and standardbreds, slightly less so in thoroughbreds, quarter horses, and Arabians. We don't have evidence that it is as prevalent in other breeds, but they also haven't been studied as extensively. Warmbloods and standardbreds and thoroughbreds have probably been studied the most. Something important to note, though, is that OC lesions or OCD lesions are rarely seen in ponies or in feral horses. And what this suggests is that selective breeding and the way that we manage these horses and the way that they've been managed historically are all key factors in the development of this disease process.
So that leads into my next question, which is, how does OCD happen? Is it a genetic issue, an environmental issue, a nutritional issue, a combination of all three of these things?
Sure thing. So that's a great question, and it's going to build upon what I already talked about with the endochondral ossification process and disturbances to that process. I think the most important thing to understand is that OCD is a disease that is caused by an interplay of factors, and isolating them is really tricky. The etiology is truly multifactorial in origin. What I already described, that alterations in the process of endochondral ossification and vascular changes causing focal necrosis or abnormal structure of our subarticular cartilage, it's caused by a contribution of genetics, environmental effects, which I'm going to lump both nutrition, exercise, and new environment, and then biomechanical factors as well. I think it's important that we think about like the relative effects and the timing of these multiple causative factors. So as far as genetics go, there is definitely a genetic correlation between a predilection for osteochondrosis, but it's complicated. And those who have gone really on a deep dive into the genetics have found that there's a loci associated with that process of endochondral ossification on about 2/3 of the chromosomes within the horse. So just to say, it's really complicated, the number of different genes that are contributing to this process. There's also a lot of conflicting data in this realm as well. And the dynamic nature of the disease in itself makes it really tricky to study. But I think what the probably the most broadest stroke statement that I can say is that genetics play at least a modest effect, if not more. And going back to what I said earlier, given that this disease seems to be specific to athletic breeds with specific breeding, with selective breeding practices, it's clear that genetics certainly play a part, but we still have a lot more to learn in that realm, and it's not the whole story. Under the environmental umbrella, I'll talk both about nutritional effects and then biomechanical effects through exercise and loading. The balance of trace minerals and dietary energy level have both been implicated as a contributing factor to osteochondrosis. Specifically, copper has been found to have a positive effect on healing of OC lesions, and there is some mixed evidence to support copper supplementation in gestating mares. Very high phosphorus levels are associated with a pathogenesis of osteochondrosis, but very high means like 4 times normal, so pretty uncommon for that to just happen incidentally, I think, in the environment. Dietary energy levels and specifically easily digestible carbohydrates have been associated with higher incidences of osteochondrosis. Juvenile horses that are going through rapid growth spurts and are all of a sudden lanky and tall at the withers, like, you know, a few days later, they are often common offenders. And horses exhibiting these changes are ones that we recommend cutting back on their carb intake because we know that these horses are often ones that we're finding these lesions in. So lastly, the biomechanical factors play, they play a large role just based on the fact that we have really common predilection sites within joints. So we know that the way that a horse is loading with typical conformation, that these lesions occur in predictable places. There are some thoughts that the immediate change to weight bearing after birth can trigger these lesions. There are typically not osteochondrosis lesions ever found in fetal tissues when they're studied. Biomechanical loading is also related to a lot of things, though. Exercise regimens, which are going to be completely different in different management systems, conformation of foals, which is going to be very individual, the firmness of the ground that these foals are exercising on, the evenness of the ground. So there's so many variables. There are some much older studies that suggested that foals experiencing more regular exercise at a young age had fewer lesions. These studies are flawed. They're inconsistent. But I think getting foals to exercise regularly is generally thought to be productive. The last thing that I want to talk about is that osteochondrosis is a really dynamic condition. So many lesions that are present very early in life regress and heal without intervention. In that early juvenile stage during rapid growth, there's going to be a sharp drop off at some point in the collagen metabolism process, which is going to limit future repair mechanisms for articular cartilage after a certain point. This was studied extensively as probably about 20 to 30 years ago. And it's thought that in the tarsocrural joint of the hock, up to about 5 to 6 months of age, those lesions can be dynamic. So they can spontaneously regress. But after about 6 months or so, typically if there are lesions there, they're not going to regress. And for the femoropatellar joint, the stifle, it's a little bit later in the 8 to 9 month age window. Really small lesions have been shown to resolve on an even later timeline in more recent literature, but I typically follow those rules when I'm thinking about management if we're seeing those.
And speaking of age, is there an upper age limit by which a horse would have OCD? Like, at what point are they no longer at risk for developing them?
I think because of the rapid growth phases that we are seeing, that point of no return that we're talking about in the like late weanling to early yearling age, if they don't have any OCDs at that point, I think it's unlikely that they're going to develop any new ones. If there happen to be any lesions found, more likely to be traumatic in origin at that time.
Today's Disease Du Jour podcast is brought to you by Merck Animal Health. Merck Animal Health believes that if we all do right by the horse, we'll never do wrong. That's why they're driven by an unconditional commitment to the horse and to the veterinarians and communities who support them. From infectious disease tracking through the Equine Respiratory Biosurveillance Program, to building a sustainable profession through the Veterinary Wellbeing Study, to creating equine health products with the highest level of safety and efficacy, Merck Animal Health is unconditional. It's just who they are. Learn more at MerckAnimalHealthUSA.com. So, what are some of the clinical signs you'd usually see with OCD? And I know this would probably be different in like a foal versus a ridden horse that might have had this condition undiagnosed for a few years.
Sure. So typically, the most common thing that we're going to see is just acute onset of joint effusion, usually with no lameness. And we're often seeing these in late weanlings and early yearlings, I would say. Severe lesions can cause lameness, but lameness is uncommon. Many horses with OCD present with no clinical signs at all, and rather that lesions identified on survey radiographs or incidentally found on radiographs that are looking at something else later in life or, say, pre-purchase films.
So I guess speaking of radiographs, with the prevalence of OCD in some breeds, do you recommend taking baseline radiographs of young horses?
Sure. I think that's a great question. I think it really depends on the intended use of the horse and industry standards within the intended use. It's common in the thoroughbred and standardbred industry to screen these horses in their late weanling to early yearling stage, looking ahead to yearling sales that will happen usually around when these horses are 18 months of age, so that if there are any lesions, they get cleaned up on a timeline that everything is looking very cosmetic at the time of sale. Warm bloods can be on that timeline to slightly later, depending on where they are being raised, their intended use and potential import, or like a pre-purchase exam sometimes. And there are a bunch of other factors there as well. For a horse of a breed with no predilection, like the ones I've talked about before, are standard breds or warm bloods and are thoroughbreds, with athletic intentions in mind, I think it's wise to screen these horses so that any lesions that may be present can be managed early in the disease process in order just to optimize long-term joint health and functional outcome for long-term. Because of the dynamic process, dynamic nature that I've already talked about, I keep caution taking screening films really too early. Once they're 9 months, though, it's unlikely that any lesions present will regress at that point.
So if you do find OCD, how do you recommend managing it? And at what point do you send the horse to surgery to treat the condition?
Sure thing. When we think about treatment of OCDs, I think about three categories of patients. So there are those patients that have both clinical signs and radiographic signs. There are those that have clinical signs, but no radiographically evident signs, and those with radiographic, but no clinical signs. So we'll start with a horse that that has clinical signs, likely effusion, possible to unlikely lameness. Arthroscopic debridement and fragment removal is recommended, so surgery. Whether, and truly that's whether or not there's a lesion that's radiographically apparent. if we even if we can't find it on radiographs, but you have a horse that's in that age category that's presenting with acute effusion of one of our high motion joints that has a predilection for these, there's a lesion in there that warrants evaluation and debridement, even if we can't see it on radiographs. Like, we know where to look once we're in there, and there is something to be done that's causing that synovitis that we're seeing externally. That last category are asymptomatic patients with radiographic lesions. These can be found incidentally. They can be found on radiographic screening in a young horse or on pre-purchase exam. When they're found on radiographic screening on young horses, surgery is indicated for these horses in order to obtain a horse without joint effusion or lameness when it's time to be athletic and to clean up these films for sale purposes as well. The best option for these horses for long-term joint health is surgical exploration, fragment removal, and debridement before the fragment causes any potential damage to either a growing or a mature joint, or before the horse is in training and would then need to take a break in order to have surgery and an appropriate postoperative recovery period. When we have an asymptomatic case with radiographic lesions, but the horse in question is a mature horse in training, performing at its desired level already, many of these cases are treated conservatively versus surgically. I think it depends a lot on the training goals, possibility of resale, and having them questioned on radiographs in that sense as well. But the decision for surgery isn't as clear for those. Risk and reward are certainly measured, and perhaps a disruption to training when the horse is not presenting with any clinical signs. But so those are a little bit trickier, and I think are a bit more of an involved discussion.
So is there an age surgery is most effective? Because I know I've personally run into a few horses, they're, you know, maybe like 5, 6, 7, 8. They've been under saddle for a few years and they start having clinical signs associated with OCD. Would surgery still be an effective option for these horses, or is it sort of past the point where they can heal effectively?
Sure thing. So great question. I think if a horse is presenting with, at that point, a horse in training that is having some difficulty and that has been localized, like the OCD has been identified, the source of lameness has been localized to that joint as well, I think managing that surgically is the most appropriate thing at that point. Because when you're in there arthroscopically, you're not just, you're not just taking out that lesion, you're evaluating the joint health overall. So getting an idea of what's going on in that joint and then also making appropriate post-operative recommendations. OCDs that are small, like they can become dislodged and become loose. They can cause score lines on cartilage and just will cause persistent inflammation in the joint environment as well that may be contributing to like a less than functional athleticism for that horse at that point. So ideally, the earlier that they can come out, the better, because I think the longer that we can keep the joint really healthy is better. You know, the earlier that we can get the joint really healthy and not have anything that's contributing to ongoing, even very low level inflammation is best for long-term joint health.
So you send a horse to surgery. How are you going to care for them postoperatively?
Sure. Postoperative management is a bit patient and site specific. But in general, these surgeries are well-tolerated elective procedures in young and systemically healthy animals, and their recovery is pretty quick. They're often outpatient procedures or in and out of a hospital setting pretty quickly. They're tiny little incisions. We're closing these instrument and scope portals. The surgical site is bandaged, or in the case of a stifle, is protected for recovery. The horse will be bandaged for a couple of weeks, possibly longer if they had a lot of joint effusion preoperatively. Your average lesion, I typically have them on stall rest with hand walking for a couple of weeks, then small paddock turnout for a couple of weeks, then back to full turnout and light training at that 4-week mark and full training by 6 weeks. They'll be on non-steroidal anti-inflammatories for a few days, possibly postoperative antibiotics, need for which is not necessarily supported by the literature, but can be industry driven at times in these cases. I'll often treat these joints with a course of hyaluronic acid product postoperatively for our typical like yearling looking towards sales group. I try and stay away from corticosteroids as a blanket recommendation postoperatively, but I will reach for them in persistently effusive cases where we're looking for a cosmetic outcome and on a certain timeline.
And what's the prognosis for horses with OCD, especially those that have been through surgery? And I'm sure this probably depends on the size and the location of the lesions as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Overall, the prognosis for recovery to soundness and general future athleticism for patients with your typical OCDs that I've been talking about is really in the good to excellent category. Arthroscopic fragment removal and debridement, done through tiny keyhole incisions, usually leads to an excellent cosmetic and functional result. There are some OCDs that have a lower prognosis. again, outcomes in the literature are mixed due to inconsistencies in like how they're measuring successful outcomes, limited by like the retrospective nature of some of these studies. But what has been found pretty consistently is that large lesions in the siphal on the lateral trochlear ridge, either being defined by large by their length of more than a couple of centimeters or extending deep into the subchondral bone, those have a lower prognosis compared to healthy counterparts. And there are some reports that for thoroughbred racehorses specifically, that site, that lateral trochlear ridge site, those horses with OCDs at that site are not racing as well. There are some locations that are like less common locations for OCDs that do have a decrease in prognosis. The shoulder is one that's been documented. The size of lesions, I think, matters more when the lesion is in an area that it's like an articulating aspect of the joint, but doesn't so much otherwise. So for example, like a really large distal intermediate ridge of the tibia or dirt lesion, that area is somewhat protected from the articulation. So a really big osteochondral fragment coming out of that area is not lowering the prognosis compared to a small one. If at any time an OCD becomes loose in the joint and is bouncing around before it settles down somewhere, it can cause a fair amount of articular cartilage damage and overall just inflammation in the joint. And effusion will persist for longer in these cases postoperatively, and that joint may need a little bit more ongoing support. The beauty of arthroscopy is that we can visually evaluate the health of the joint while we're managing the OCD lesion and then make decisions based on what we're seeing in there, tailored to that patient specifically.
Great. Well, do you have anything else you want to add on the topic before we wrap up?
I feel like that covers it. So I'd be happy to field any questions in the future, but I think we covered a lot here.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Taima, for joining us on this episode. And thank you so much to our audience for listening. And a very special thank you to our 2024 sponsor, Merck Animal Health, for allowing us to have these conversations. If you're enjoying the Disease Is Your podcast, we would really appreciate if you would rate and review us wherever you're listening. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, please send me an email at csison@equinenetwork.com. That's csison@equinenetwork.com.